everybody. Welcome back to Chasing Shadows, a podcast which hopes to serve as a supplement to the Ecclesiastes sermon series that we're currently walking through at the Austin Stone Community Church. My name is Ross Lester. I'm one of the pastors here. And as always, I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Val Hamilton. And today we have a special guest who's the congregation pastor of our Northwest congregation, the one and only Matt Blackwell. And yes. So, Matt, thanks for joining us today. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about you, what you do, how long you've been doing that at the Stone?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for doing all you do. This has been a fantastic experience so far. So yeah, we've been at the Stone for 12 years. We started at our downtown congregation for a hot minute, serving as the congregation pastor there for about 8 months. Mm-hmm. And then we launched our South congregation literally out of our living room of about 20 people. And then God grew that and it grew from there. And so we were there for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And then in March, we started praying through the expression of Northwest. And so we moved up to Northwest Austin. And funny is that, you know, in January of 20 is when we launched Northwest.
Oh,
nothing going on in 2020 at all. Say, yeah. Right. And in March, kind of closed it down. And but it's been a great experience. Tons of kindness of the Lord and kindness of God's people to see a church merger essentially happened through the process over COVID and during all that time. So yeah, we've been there for just a few years now, 4 years.
Matt, just in the 1 minute version, maybe just tell us a little bit of the background story to that merger. Cause it's still, every time I hear it, I get encouraged by the faithfulness of God's saints. Absolutely. And the generosity that they showed to us. And why don't you just tell our people, especially those who don't know how Northwest Congregation of the Austin Stone came to be a thing.
Sure. So there was a faithful church that had been here in Austin for about 20 years, was going through a pastoral transition, approached the elders at the Austin Stone and said, hey, we're considering what those next steps look like. Would there be an opportunity to partner together? And we get those conversations from time to time. Sure. Oftentimes for one reason or another, it just doesn't seem to work out. But this one seemed to have legs. And as the elders at the Stone and the elders at this church began having those conversations and prayerfully considering, it was a really fun experience to be a part of the humility of an older church saying, we want to continue to have gospel impact in the city of Austin. Mm-hmm. We have a facility, we have resource, and we would love to continue to grow in that. And so we had those conversations for about 6 or 8 months. We had a vote. We joke because 98% of both churches agreed to say, hey, we think God's in this, which 98% of churches don't agree about anything. And so to have some consensus around that, we've been doing that for about 4 years and just seeing the kindness and the open-handedness of so many people who gave to build a building and a church to say, hey, we want to see this continue to go beyond us for multi-generational impact really on display.
So, the people of Northwest have been such a blessing to the Austin Stone because the legacy of faith, the length of faith, the fact that they've been doing life together in community groups and just even studying the Bible together, some of them for two decades. Right, I mean, it's unbelievable. So they are a faith-filled part of our congregation. Absolutely. So grateful for them.
Yeah, sure.
Been a tremendous blessing in addition to our church. We're very, very thankful. Mm-hmm. This last week in the sermon, we covered Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and started to look at some of the verses there, which deals with the preacher, this Koheleth character based on Solomon's life, based on looking at his pursuit of pleasure. Right. And so he's kind of taking us on this journey of saying, here's where all of these pursuits in a life under the sun, a life that doesn't bring God's reality to bear upon these pursuits. Here's where they all go, right? They go nowhere. And so started week one with wisdom. This week has been pleasure. Mm-hmm. And then the week coming up is going to be work. But these verses just struck me. And Matt, you got to preach on these verses on Sunday. But I'll just read them just for the sake of those listening in, where he says in Ecclesiastes 2, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Which sounds like ultimate life, right? Yes. Like you've got the ability to just not restrict or limit yourself in any way, shape, or form. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all of my toil. Mm-hmm. Then he says, then I considered all that my hands had done and all the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. That's just kind of the opposite of what all of our dopamine pursuits tell us is going to be the reality. Absolutely. And so, Matt, you had the pleasure and privilege of preaching this text at Northwest. We have a very complex preaching structure, which we don't have time for on this podcast, but on any given week, there's a couple of different voices sharing the same text. So you shared this at Northwest. You were telling us just before we started recording it that just even in the hours before preaching this, though, you felt like the Lord really showed you something meaningful about life that isn't under the sun. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we see in particularly in this passage is, you know, he's saying, I did all of these things. I pursued all these things. And he does use some language that is reminiscent of Genesis 1 and 2. He says, I've built gardens and I've planted fruit trees, which is almost a direct copy and paste from Genesis 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So Derek Kidner in his Ecclesiastes commentary makes the point of what the preacher's trying to accomplish is recreating Eden on earth, to recreate a utopian experience of what God had created, but he's trying to recreate it without sin and without the curse. And he's actually recreating it in a sense of like, well, I'm planting all the fruit trees and no one's telling me that I can't eat of any of them. But then he gets to the end of himself, and the one thing he can buy anything he wants, anything he sees, it's his. So he's creating that utopia. But then he gets to the point later in the text in verse 15, and he says, but we still all die. Like death is still the reality for all of us. And so I'm thinking, you know, I wake up, and as we do it Sunday morning, I'm like, okay, I got to preach this morning. And I'm literally laying in bed, it's 5 a.m., and I'm thinking through this concept of recreating Eden. And the end of ourselves is, well, but we all die and death, and we still live under the curse. And then I literally shoot up out of bed, Shannon, and I was like, what is happening right now? And I'm, but there's one better than Solomon, who the creator of Eden, the creator, who began, and 1 Peter says he became, or Galatians says he's became the curse for us so that the last enemy to be destroyed is death, 1 Corinthians. So the thing that caused Solomon such grief that death comes to us all is the very good news of the gospel that Jesus came to conquer that which Solomon could not conquer, or the preacher could not conquer, you know?
That's really
So it just was one of those, wow, God knows what he's doing, even in the writing of this story, and how good news the resurrection is for each of us. So,
kind of Jesus juked yourself even before.
I totally did. For sure.
And it is something we try to do, you know, in our preaching, just tie these back to the gospel. And it's so important, especially with Ecclesiastes. Otherwise, we're just going to leave people with a bunch of questions that never resolve.
Absolutely. And I think we mentioned this, I think Tyler David mentioned this on one of the podcast episodes, but the idea of Ecclesiastes, it's so academic and philosophical that if we keep it at arm's length, it can be only academic and honestly a little depressing.
Right.
But if we allow it, and what I said is kind of to allow it to get under the rib cage, so to speak, to really grab hold of our hearts. I mean, this is one of the most liberating books for each of us because we've been pursuing pleasure in all of these things to say, no, there's actually good news in the gospel, and it's not in these things.
Well, it's so self-evident, too, because the questions that Ecclesiastes answers are the same questions that even people who are not believers are asking. Because we always get to this point where we're like, you know, Tom Brady winning all the Super Bowls and not being satisfied. Or I was thinking, you brought up Radiohead, I think, the second or first week of this, probably every episode, if I had to guess. But I was thinking, my Radiohead equivalent is Taylor Swift, obviously. Taylor Swift. They're basically the same if you just draw two lines and connect them.
Ouch.
Anyway, but here's what I want to say. You know, a lot of people think Taylor Swift songs are all about boys, and a lot of them are, and they're awesome. But at the heart of a lot of her songs is this sense of like this fear of being forgotten. And there's this thing, even for someone who's done, is so famous, maybe one of the biggest stars in the world right now, she's as known as anybody can be. And there's still this fear that she's going to be forgotten. I mean, it's just so self-evident that no matter how much you get, you still have those unresolvable questions about what really counts.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy.
That's true. And it's in all of our hearts, right? As Ecclesiastes will go on to say that God's placed eternity in the hearts of men.
Yeah.
And so then the fact that we would die and be forgotten is the ultimate fear, because we've got this longing for something that lasts beyond our lifetime.
Right.
But everything that we see only lasts our lifetime.
So,
Matt, one of the things I've always loved about you is your ability to frame sermons in memorable points and structure them in a way that really speaks to the truth of the text in bite-sized chunks. It must be that Dallas theological seminary training that I never
paid
got.
A lot of money to be able to do that.
That's amazing.
It worked. You did it.
You spoke of this pursuit of Eden and really brought it home in your sermon, which I really enjoyed, by saying that this is a drive that we all have, right? That I want to feel something great. I want to build something great, and I want to be someone great. You want to just talk through those three categories a little bit?
Yeah. And I think I was trying to capture, this isn't, you know, it's an ancient text, but it's a very modern issue that each of us have. And so I was trying to capture, what is it for modernity, for us, what are we trying to accomplish that the preacher was also trying to accomplish? And I think all of those in our pursuit of pleasure, when often when we think of pursuit of pleasure, we think of only the physical sense, but there's a lot of other ways that we can pursue pleasure. He definitely does that when he talks about, you know, he experienced all the pleasures that there were, and even some in some really dark ways about how he was pursuing and really using people for his own personal pleasure. He uses the words I, me, myself 39 times in this section. It is very self-centered about how he is experiencing pleasure. And to the point of, I think when we fast forward it to today, we have the similar idea, like we want to pursue pleasure for ourselves, even to the point where we try to build an identity on our pleasure seeking. So the identity that we have is, if I feel good, I am good. And if it is feeling good, then it is true. And so we're building truth statements and identity statements on how we feel in the world. And really what Solomon is doing is saying, I did it to the nth degree. Like, you guys, it's cute how you pursue pleasure. Let me tell you how I did it. And it's to the fullest extent of pleasure. So I want to feel something great. And he says, man, I tried it and it didn't work. So he moves to work and says, I want to build something great. And I built gardens and I built pools and I built forests. And you know, he said, well, I drank the wine. That wasn't enough. So then I planted the vineyard.
Right.
So now I could have all the wine. And guess what? That too is empty. And so he goes to building these projects. And the third category was, man, that didn't work either. So I want to be someone great. And it's fascinating. If you look back at the text in the ESV, it talks, he says, uses the word greatness twice. He says, I had great possessions more than anyone else. And I became great. I was better than everyone else. And C.S. Lewis in his Mere Christianity talks about this idea of, we don't just want to be great. We want to be greater. We don't want to just be good looking. We want to be better looking. And that is the comparison that he says, I want to be great means I want to be better. I want to be greater than everybody around me. And the fact of the matter is, he actually was better, and it still was empty. And so part of it is just trusting that pursuit of, like, man, I want to learn from him because he did it all wrong. But yet we all still say, well, I want to give it a shot myself. You know, I want to do it all. I want to feel all those feels.
So good, man. Those longings are just what drives so much of,
oh my gosh,
not just our dysfunction, but just even good things amongst common grace in our life. It kind of drives society, because it's what drives individuals, right?
Right.
And we want to feel, we want to build, we want to be, right? These are our urges and our drives. So it's really modern its reading today.
Well, and you get the sense that you see how he got to the nth degree of those pursuits. If everything failed along the way, you have to keep doubling down and looking and maybe this and maybe that. And probably you end up places you never thought you would be in pursuit of the thing that can't be fulfilled, which is just an endless cycle. But I really liked, you know, in Hallam's sermon, he did the 3 points too, which is just so helpful for the memory. But he talked about the pursuit of pleasure, the problem of pleasure, and the purpose of pleasure, which I thought were—
That's strong alliteration.
I was going to say, it's got the alliterative thing going. So there's a couple things. There's a lot of good stuff there. But what I liked in particularly the problem of pleasure was that it never really satisfies. There's that sense we all kind of realize that's what Ecclesiastes is saying. And what Hallam said was that if we had no limits, we would like Solomon did, just pursue until we're trying to find it. Right. We just keep doubling down. But I found myself, and I don't know if other people can identify with this, but this sense of, is pleasure bad? Mm-hmm. I was kind of finding myself, right. Should I just mm-hmm. enjoy things less? Because sure. I'm not planting vineyards. Maybe if I had the money, I would plant a great vineyard. I think it could be great. you know, but I find pleasure in things like my family and mm-hmm. things like mm-hmm. football, American right. football. I find pleasure in really good food. And you kind of get this sense as you're hearing the sermon preached, should I just enjoy things less?
Right.
So it's more ordered. And I think one of the things I was leaning on, like, as I was asking that question is, or should I love God more, mm-hmm. right? And kind of do the battle of, I know this isn't actually where satisfaction is, but I wondered if you sure. guys had thoughts on that sense of, should I just have mm-hmm. less joy,
right?
Or should I have more joy in God, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's such an interesting question, Val, and I'm seeing so much of this happen, not just in society, but in my own kind of wrestle mm-hmm. with myself, right? In society, I think we're seeing hedonism, mm-hmm. right? And right. so you are your pleasures, and your pursuit of Absolutely. Pleasure should be unbridled, and that it will be able to deliver on its promise, right? But we're also seeing, particularly amongst young men, particularly who are leaning towards Stoicism, a kind of ascetic movement mm-hmm. where they're saying, oh no, like the denial of pleasure right. is where your power lies, right? And so you need to be able to sit on a 17-hour flight without headphones or look at a screen.
Those people are insane.
Yeah, so all of these things. But the pursuit is the same. Mm-hmm. The pursuit is that's how I will deal with the fact that I know that there's going to be a gap between what I want from this thing and what this thing can actually give me.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the one pursuit of that is that, well, then I just need more of the thing. Mm-hmm. And the other pursuit is I just need less of the thing. But they're both trying to fill the same gap. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it had me thinking. I was actually quite struck. I love weeks when I'm not preaching, and I know many people feel that way. But I was sitting there and I was quite struck. I've always been dissatisfied with my own dissatisfaction. I'm a mm-hmm. bit of a womp-womp hangout, mm-hmm. right? Because we'll go see a movie and I'll pick up the fault in the plot line mm-hmm. or the, right. yeah. you know, we'll go see a concert and I'll hear the thing that's, you know, yeah, like, oh, I did not like that, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and I know that's a problem and then I feel bad about myself. But what if dissatisfaction, when rightly harnessed, mm-hmm. is actually a gift from God? Mm-hmm. And that's what I started thinking of, like, oh no, he's giving us this limitation
yep.
so that we can enjoy things mm-hmm. because we never place on them the expectation that they would fulfill us.
Right. The yes. weight that it can't yeah. actually deliver right. on.
And so therefore, Christians with the right view of things should be able to enjoy yep. things more than anyone else mm-hmm. because they're not asking for it to do what it cannot do.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where I need to grow in mm-hmm. kind of stewarding the dissatisfaction that the Spirit mm-hmm. puts in our mm-hmm. heart, but not allowing it to then make you just miserable. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yeah. And you're thinking, okay, is the preacher's point hedonism, like just go get it all? Well, mm-hmm. no. Is it monasticism, mm-hmm. meaning don't do anything? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it nihilism, meaning nothing matters? So just it's all mm-hmm. meaningless. Mm-hmm. He's saying it's all meaningless to point to, and even in verse 24, but there is theists, there's yeah. a theistic reality to yeah. that God is a good giver. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we've mistaken the gift for the giver.
Yeah.
And therefore we've turned it upside down, which is Romans 1, yeah. Which is the idea of I only want the gift, but I don't want the giver.
Yeah.
And when we pursue that, we put mm-hmm. all of this weight on sexual pleasure. We put all yeah. of this right. weight on feeling good and our work and all mm-hmm. of these things. And they're just not meant to carry that weight.
Right.
But when we recognize, no, there is a good giver mm-hmm. and he gives good gifts, I can enjoy the gift of pleasure. I can enjoy a good meal. I can enjoy mm, the mm-hmm. vineyard. I can enjoy my kids.
Right.
Not by putting... I'm not making gods of them. They're wonderful gifts and terrible gods, right?
Yeah.
But yet we try to extract from kids or wine or pleasure what it was never meant to carry. Mm-hmm. And it's called idolatry, yeah. and it's right. why it doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. That's I think really kids and wine are closely related in the, yeah, lives, in the lives of many. So, although that's a topic for another day.
Yes. That's right, yeah.
In all seriousness, though, I do want to end today on a bit of a pastoral note sure. because the pursuit of pleasure has physiological and spiritual consequences right. if we don't get it right. right? Mm-hmm. And just so like dopamine cycles can lead to addiction mm-hmm. patterns. Yes. And then our spiritual life can lead to patterns of shame mm-hmm. Because we keep going back to the same thing. Right. We keep going back to this broken cistern thinking it'll be able to quench our thirst, and it doesn't. And mm-hmm. so then we hate ourselves and presume mm-hmm. that God hates us too. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I did want to say to those listening who are stuck in a cycle of pleasure pursuit mm-hmm. that there is hope mm-hmm. from the gospel. Yeah. There's this great passage, this section in the Ecclesiastes guide that I wanted to read, because I think it mm-hmm. describes where some of our people might be and what they're feeling. It says, "Desire lives like an insatiable itch gnawing at the edges of your soul, needing to be scratched. You feel it, you want it to stop, but temptation pursues the weary. It promises relief without consequence. It whispers at first, you try to ignore it, but it relentlessly commands your attention. You give in. With each scratch, the itch intensifies. Work obsession, alcohol, sex, fantasy, power, affirmation, even creativity, none of it helps the way you hoped. So you scratch it again. But the initial high has worn off. Now it demands even more attention, with even greater intensity, just to take that gnawing feeling away. You keep it to yourself. You make excuses. You know you want out, but you're stuck, and pleasure becomes a prison." It's so beautifully written, but I think describes the pain that a lot mm-hmm. of people are in. So I wanted to say, for those of you stuck in this pattern, mm-hmm. there's a way out. There's people who want to walk with you to break these cycles and to offer you a life with God where there's pleasures at his right hand, which mm-hmm. are forevermore. He doesn't want to withhold pleasure from you. He wants to give you actually your deepest desires, but he wants to free you from this pattern of brokenness. And so once you reach out to your congregational leadership, we have people in our counseling center and people in our pastoral teams, elders and deacons who would love to walk with you, love to point you towards a better way. You don't have to stay stuck in this pattern forever. So friends, thanks so much for joining us today. Such helpful stuff, Matt. Thank you for your work in prepping and preaching so faithfully. As always, if you've got questions, you can send them to podcast@austinstone.org. We'd love to tackle some of those as they come up. In the week coming up, as we are recording this, we'll be talking about how we try to get too much out of our work. Mm. That also our jobs, our vocations mm-hmm. is something right. where we pursue the same meaningless pursuit. And so I think it'll be helpful. We hope and pray that you join us at one of our Sunday services, and we'll see you soon.